This is Keeping Track, and you're listening to Molly Huddle,
Alicia Montano,
and Roisin Magedigan-Dumas.
We want to highlight the important topics, inspiring stories, and amazing women in sport.
We're three Olympians from two countries, two moms, and one current pro coming together to talk about issues we're passionate about in the sports world.
And we care about the current and future landscape of women's sports. And this is just how we're keeping track.
Hey everyone, welcome back to season three of Keeping Track. We have a great episode today. We talk to 400 meter and 400 hurdle track stars for Team USA, the 400 meter diva Natasha Hastings, and the 2017 world champion Corey Carter, aka the ladies of Track Girls Summer. It's the YouTube sensation for track fans you all need in your lives if you haven't watched them already. We talked to the women about their challenging last year in the sport and life, how they found each other hosting a live track talk show, and the response it's gotten, as well as what's next and what else these powerhouses have going on. These ladies bring the culture to track and field talk shows and bring some real talk to this podcast as they both open up about what's helped them get through this past year. So take a listen and then follow them both this next upcoming season. We also have some notes on the podcast as we get into the catch-up. We mention how Mary Noguchi, third-place finisher in the recent Boston Marathon, is speaking out against violence against Kenyan women in response to the shocking, horrible murder of one of the best 10K runners in the world, Agnes Tirop. She has recently started the Women's Athletic Alliance, and we will share more information about that, see what they need, how you can help them. But for now, you can follow Mary Noguchi on Instagram, just at Mary N-G-U-G-I. And she's also working with British 400 runner Jody Williams, as women from all around the sports world are asking how they can help and being allies in this. We will let you listen to Track Girl Summer, and we'll do a quick little catch-up of all the fall marathon action first with Roisin. Thanks for keeping track. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. We're back with a new season of Keeping Track.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Myself and Roisin are doing a little catch-up because a lot has happened this fall.
Before we get into the marathons, Molly, because I know there's a lot of marathons happening in the last 15 days or even. Tell us about you and your life. And you're not running, you didn't run Boston. What are you doing?
Yes. So most people probably have heard, if you listen to the podcast, you already know that I was supposed to run the Boston Marathon, but I am not because instead I'm pregnant. So I am going to have a baby by the time the spring Boston Marathon rolls around, which is exciting. So yeah, Kurt and I are having our first baby. And it's something I really wanted to fit in to my running career at some point. So yeah, I'm trading a marathon in, for the baby. Yep.
No, it's so exciting. So congratulations, Molly. Yes. Obviously, Alicia and I are like delighted for you.
I know. And I'll be asking you guys lots of advice. So I'm glad that you're pros already.
Yeah. And if anyone's interested in, I don't know, maternity and pregnancy during running, we'll have it all coming up. If anyone has questions or in that, actually might be good to do an episode. And, you know, if anyone's interested in that topic, send along your questions or email us. And we'll definitely have more. Actually, we've got some good research to show in a couple of weeks that we can bring that up as well. So,
yes, we will have to do a season three episode on that for sure. Between you and Alicia, that you're so full of great info. Roisin is talking about a study that's coming out that she and Francine Darroch, our friend of the pod, helped create and gather all the information, and it's really benefiting athletes who are doing this right now, like me and all the other women who are going to try and run through pregnancy and come back afterwards. So helpful.
So yeah, we'll watch the space for that.
Yes.
So congratulations. How are you feeling, by the way? Like, for anyone who's interested, how you're feeling in that, like.
I feel okay. You know, I mean, I cut my training in half just because, so I'm doing like 40, 45 miles a week. I have been since probably the last 2 months. I feel okay. I feel like I could do more probably, but I just kind of think, why bother doing more at this point? And I figure I'll eventually be doing less than that too. So just going to take a little break whenever I need to.
Yeah, good, good. And I'm sure the second trimester, hopefully you feel a little bit more energy and then you feel good.
Yeah.
So far, so good. Not too much morning sickness and all, right?
No, not too bad. I am feeling a little better. I'm at like I'm like on week 15 right now. I am feeling a little less like.
Placenta is complete. Now you start feeling better.
Placenta completed. Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating. I love it. So great, great. Okay, so we'll back to the running shop talk. We've got 4 out of the 6 world marathon majors to discuss. 4 of them happened in a 15-day span, thereabouts. Starting off with Berlin, Molly, what do you think?
Wow, okay. So Berlin was the first one back. Everyone was so excited to have majors. It looked like a really nice weather day over there, a little warm, maybe it was 69 degrees, I think, Fahrenheit or so. And we saw an Ethiopian sweep, super fast race. Our top few women were in the 220 to 223 range. The winner in her debut marathon was, Gautam Gebreselassie. She ran 220.09, almost dipped under the 220 there. Yeah. So yeah, it was a pretty crazy day.
That's great. And then we moved on a week later to London, which was another great day for running, wasn't it?
So yeah, London a week later, it was a deep field. There were 5 women under 220. And all the way down, I think Charlotte Perdue was 10th with a 223. So this was a really deep day. That was a 2-minute PR for Charlotte, a really well-known British marathoner. And the winner was Jocelyn Jepkowski in 217. She was moving.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And Bridget Koskaj was in this field, the world record holder. And she ended up 4th, just showing how deep this field was. And we had some really fast seeds who were kind of trying to double back from the Tokyo Olympics. And that's just a hard turnaround. You know, they had eight weeks, so they weren't in the top 3, but
yeah,
it was Jocelyn's day.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just looking up there, you know, you're looking at like 5:12 pace for the 26.2 miles. So some savage running. Yeah. You're just like, yeah, just throw in a 217 there. Really, really amazing. Okay, and then we hopped over to, well, we didn't, but the World Marathon Majors hopped over to Chicago, where it was warmer and humid, and the winner was
Ruth Chepngetich. And do you remember we were, us runners on our text chain were like texting each other about how fast she went out that day. We were like, she's dropped her male pacer already. It's only been 8 miles.
Yeah, so, I was at a little 5K and my like phone was blowing up from you guys. You're like, this is not real.
Yeah. So it was a humid day and she went for the world record. I mean, she was out at one point, she was on 212 marathon pace. And then she slowed down when her male pacer stepped off. And she still went through the half at 67:34, which, I mean, that's not far off 214 pace. And then she had a big positive split. I was wondering if second place was going to catch Ruth. But she held on for the win because that lead was just too big. I think her second 5K was almost 75 minutes. So that's a hard way. Her second half. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So, that was exciting. And Emma Bates had a big one to finish second. I think she PR'd by 40 seconds or something like that to run 224. She passed a lot of people at the end, so that was super exciting.
And yeah, I'm just reading about her. Like she joined Emma Coburn and Joe Bossard's group recently, and the chain has really benefited for her.
Yeah, it was cool. Like I saw posts that they were all out there cheering for her in person. So like that squad, I think, really carried her through. And I'm sure
good thing going on there.
Yeah, I'm sure that was helping. And then Sarah Hall, who we were looking to maybe for an American record, just had a tough day in that weather. I don't think anyone was running an American record in that weather. So she hung on for third and 227, which if your off day is still a podium finish, that is not very, not too shabby.
Yeah, it just shows you like her consistency has been amazing with this marathon, the marathons in the last few years. And then the very next day we had Indigenous Peoples Day in Boston, where we had the Boston Marathon. And another great day there. A little rainier though, right?
It was a little rainy in the morning. Yeah. On the, I don't know, all these marathons were on the warm side this year, I think, but not too bad. The times were maybe, like I noticed the pack all went out and stayed together for a long time on the women's side. So I don't know if that meant it was a little harder of a day.
Yeah. The men's race was funny. It was fun to watch with the American guy taking off.
Yeah, the breakaway that he lasted for a long time. So it was the complete opposite of the women's race. They were kind of in a pack the whole time. And finally, Diana Kipyoge broke away to win. And we saw who I was rooting for, Edna Kiplagat, chase her down. 41-year-old Edna, she's such a legend. She did that in 2017 in Boston and won. I remember she came from behind and was just passing people the last like 5K.
What a legend.
She's just amazing. And Mary Noguchi in third place. It was actually like a pretty close finish for like third, fourth, fifth. So it was really exciting. I was at the finish line that day and it was really fun to be there and just like see everybody cruising down Boylston Street.
Yeah. Did it make you itchy for it to do it again, like to do it?
It did, yeah. Yeah, I definitely want to do Boston again. You know, the only time I'd done it, it wasn't like the best conditions. I really want to
get it. It was the worst conditions you're talking about.
It was the worst of the worst. So yeah, I want to.
You swam down it.
Yeah, so watching people run down Boylston was pretty, definitely, it would make anyone want to do it. If you're standing at the finish line, you're like, I'm doing this next year.
Yeah. Does it feel weird to be like not running though? Is that some, like, did it feel funny to just be like,
it wasn't too, like, I mean, we've both like cheered Kim on and cheered our teammates on. So it's kind of just like that point of view. Like I've been in that point of view, but it was crazy to see like behind the scenes, just like everything that goes into the finish line alone. Like, I mean, you know, the marathons are a huge, just logistical, organizational, like masterpiece. But when you're right before the gun goes off at the finish line, you see everyone like in their walkie talkies being like, the flyover is happening. Okay. Cue this thing. Cue the dogs. Cue.
Wow.
Like, you're just like, wow, what a machine this is. This is kind of amazing.
And what about the security must be pretty high in there now. After
There's a lot of, I'm assuming bomb sniffing dogs. There are a lot of dogs, a lot of security, a lot of checks. Definitely felt pretty safe.
Okay, very good.
And shout out to Nell Rojas in Boston. I didn't want to leave her out. She had a big PB.
I think she's having a great fall. Yeah. Nell is doing really well.
Yeah, she won the exciting 10-miler against Jenny Simpson a few weeks earlier, so you knew she was fit. So wanted to give Nell her shout out. Okay, Ro, what do you think about Shalane Flanagan's attempt to run all, she's doing six, she's not doing even just the five, doing all six marathons in, what is it, 43 days.
Yeah, my hats, plural, are off to her. She's got a lot of energy, that lady, fair play to her, and I'm like fascinated, and obviously she's, you know, supreme athlete, and you know she's clicking away on these 235s and no bother to her at all, and you know it's great to see that she gets to enjoy running in a different way. And I know the last time we talked to her she had an injury and was having a hard time. You know, she had some knee replacement two maybe of the last while, so
two,
to get to get
tendons,
running back,
I think maybe two okay. new tendons
Yeah, so obviously her running is back in full force, and it's great to see her enjoying this other side of it. And she just seems so full of enthusiasm, and yeah, like her play to her, I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to her after New York, like maybe a few weeks after, and just see like what was it like? How did it feel? Yeah. How was that? What was motivating her? Like, how did this work? Like, how did she plan it? I have so many questions, but some quick stats on this. She wants to do them all in under 3 hours, and she's like way under 3 hours. She's doing, so her first one in Berlin was 2:38. Her a week later fastest one still is this London marathon. She ran 2:35 like low, and said after the race she actually had to walk a few times because she went out too hard and still ran that fast. Then Chicago, this is the weekend everyone was wondering about. She ran conservative and ran 2:46, knowing she had to run Boston the next day. And in Boston she ran 2:40. Even past some of the professional runners. Yeah. And then she went home to Portland, and about a week later, I think it was, they did a marathon simulation to make up for Tokyo, which has been delayed. And she ran 2:35 low there. So she's really crushing these. I'm like, is she going to unleash in New York? Let's see what happens there.
Yeah. It's amazing. Cool.
And another woman who's doing all of the majors is Tatiana McFadden. She won Chicago and has podiumed in all the other races so far. So she isn't doing Tokyo because I think she's probably going to do it in the spring when it got rescheduled. Mm-hmm. So Tatiana is also crushing it. And Manuela Schar has won every single one, except she took Chicago off because she didn't want to do that tight turnaround. But Manuela might win like 5 of the 6 majors this fall, which is amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So that's the pro wheel roundup. Those two women are dominating. They're so exciting to watch.
Yeah. The theme New York is next, so I'm excited for that. Unfortunately, Emily Sisson, our friend and teammate, has had to pull out of that, which is a bummer. So hopefully she's feeling better, and I wish her a speedy return to fitness there. What are you excited about for New York, Molly?
Oh gosh, I haven't looked at the start list, but New York's always a great race. No, Mary Catani. We saw that she retired this past year. She's usually, she's a New York legend. She's won, oh gosh, how many times there? 5. Yeah. I know some American runners like Steph Rothstein and Kellen Taylor and Laura Sweet.
You always bring it.
Yep, they're on the start list. I would need to look again to see who else is there, but it's going to be an exciting day. So what else has been going on? Anything this fall?
A couple
world records. The most recent news probably to us as of the day we're recording this is the world record in the half marathon by 23-year-old Batez Nebet Gede. 62:52 officially. Which might take you a minute to like process, because it took me a minute to process that time.
Yeah, and we can throw these numbers around, but like 62:52 is an elite man's time, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we have to gender everything, but I'm just saying it's like 4:48 per mile.
Yeah, like it's only seconds off the time that some of the American men who qualify for the World Half Marathon Championships would run to go do an international meet at that level. Yeah. actually amazing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's running 4:48 for the distance. And that's 15-minute pace for 5K. This is elite running at its like finest. And this discussion about, was this the greatest female athletic performance of all time in the running world? It's just, I don't know.
It's crazy when you look, Latez Nebet was beaten by Sifan Hassan in 2019 and in 2021 on the track, but maybe she needed to just run, further. Maybe her distance is going to be, not that wasn't an amazing, she's run 14:06. Guys, she has a world record in the 5K. What she can do at marathon and half marathon is going to be really interesting. That's a mind-blowing performance.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, I think someone tried to figure out what that equates to for marathon, and it's like 212 something, which is bananas.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
We're just like, okay.
I know. Yeah. And I was trying to say to Molly, like, that's how most people feel about her American record, which is what, 5:12 pace.
Yeah. Like, I had to actually kind of like ask my husband, Kurt, like about the splits and like to wrap my head around it at first, because it's closer to a man's time than a woman. You know, it was like territory that I don't like relate to. So yes, when I was thinking, I was like, so wait, is how good is that? And he was just like, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And to be honest, I feel the same way about your half marathon 5:12 pace. It's like, yeah, what? I kind of get my head around that. So it's like, you're getting the experience.
That's like marathon pace now. That's the, elite women's marathon.
Actually, on a sadder note, one of the world records in the women's 10K on the road was made by Agnes Tira. And many people know now, but Agnes was actually murdered at her home back in Kenya a couple of weeks ago at this point. And there's still like, obviously it's very, very sad and very, very tragic for the whole running community and her family and friends in Kenya. We just want to kind of like, share our respects to Agnes. And he's just turning 25, 26, just such a tragedy to still figuring out the details and what could have happened, but most likely was murdered by her husband, which a lot of Kenyan athletes are talking about domestic violence. And I know it's not, just a Kenyan issue, but I think it's important that we bring awareness to this topic. And
it's definitely shook the running world. Agnes is one of the best runners in the world.
And then the Berlin 10K road race,
she had that world record before it was reset by Kalkadin Gazagin months later. But she, if something like that can happen to one of the best woman athletes in the world, it's pretty scary. It shows that there's a lot of women speaking out, like Boston third placer Mary Noguchi and Viola Legat had both been posting on social media and had some really powerful things to say. And I think they were trying to organize something back in Kenya to focus more on protection of women and the corruption that can go on there when you have a successful female athlete, because running is such a big, it's like such an economical impact in Kenya. And I think some of the women are mistreated and taken advantage of with their, when they become great athletes and are bringing in money, unfortunately. So extremely sad news there. Devastating.
Yeah, absolutely. So may she rest in peace.
Yes. But we also wanted to say before we head out, this is a new season 3. We have some good stuff coming towards you guys, all you people who are Keeping Track fans. We wanted to mention, please keep giving us ratings on iTunes and comments. We want to try and get to 500 ratings. That will help us with our visibility as people search iTunes for women's sports podcasts. And also, don't forget to check out our website, keeping-track.com, I think. I'll link that for all of our links. And, we want you, most of the women we mentioned, even in this catch-up, we're going to have how to follow them on social media and online. Yeah. Links to the races and links to articles about the races. And then we still do have our Patreon if you are inclined to support us that way. So that's linked to our Instagram account and our blog as well. Now we'll give you Track Girl Summer, the ladies of Track Girl Summer. Such a great interview. Corey Carter and Natasha Hastings. Enjoy. Hey everyone, welcome back to Keeping Track, season 3. We're super excited about our first episode of season 3. We have you may have heard of Track Girl Summer, Natasha Hastings and Corey Carter, who we really want to talk about this show, but also their excellence as athletes. Just some brief stats. Natasha Hastings, aka 400 meter diva, has over 10 medals in the 4x4, most of them gold, has been good for a long time, World Youth, World Junior Champion, NCAA Champion in the 400. You all know Natasha. You've seen her at all the World Championships and Olympics. And Corey Carter, 2017 World Champ in the 400 hurdles, NCAA Champ from Stanford, and the other half of Track Girl Summer. So we're going to dive in. There's a lot more to these women, and we're going to talk about it. I'm so excited.
Yes, yes. I'm super stoked. I got an opportunity to connect with Natasha Hastings and Corey Carter a few weeks ago and on Track Girl Summer. And I have to say, it was I just felt super comfortable connecting with them. Excited. We talked for a really long time. So if you guys haven't already headed over to Track Girl Summer, you can follow them at IG. You can follow them also on YouTube, which is also, you know, where you're going to be able to watch all their videos. So do all that stuff. I wanted to just ask really quick, first of all, on the track side of things, Corey, how you got into the sport, Natasha, how you guys both got into the sport. You guys pick whoever wants to get started on that.
Well, since you said my name first, I'll go first. I basically have been an athlete my entire life. I remember, like, apparently when I was like 4 or 5, I was like sitting on my sister's bench trying to get in the game, even though I wasn't yet old enough to play. And I pretty much played every sport except for track, and I just was kind of bored with softball. It moves too slow, so I just was like, oh, I want to try track, and I thought I was going to be a heptathlete. I wanted to be the next Jackie Joyner Kersee. And then I found out about the 800, and I was like, actually, I'm in love with the hurdles. And it's been a wrap ever since. So yeah, I started in like 7th grade and have been with it since then.
You weren't trying to hang out with me in the 800, Corey?
It was actually one of my strongest events, and I would be like, hey guys, we could just not do this and just take whatever place we're in at this point and walk away. We don't have to do the 800. And no one ever wanted to take me up my offer. And I was like, all right, well, I'm about to get max points here.
I love it. Natasha, what about you?
Well, first, thanks for having us. Exciting to be here and to be on another platform that's creating safe space for us like-minded women to talk. But I was a little bit younger than Corey, not a lot younger. I say that I was born into the sport, or I believe I was born into the sport. Both of my parents ran track. My mom was an Olympian for Trinidad. And I joined a team officially when I was 9. My mom used to take me to a track meet called the Colgate Women's Games. That is still in existence to this day. I think it's been around for like almost 30 years now, if not 30 already. It's a series of meets in New York that's held over a 6-week period, and anyone can enter their kids in. My mom took me every year. And then this year, my coach, who ended up coaching me from then till I went off to college, coached me, or discovered me, I should say. And I specialized in the 400 very early. I probably specialized around like 11, 10 or 11. So yeah, I've been going at it for a really long time.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I've got 2 questions from that. First, your parents were, you know, major track athletes. Did you feel any pressure to do track, or is it something that you wanted to do? And then talking about specializing a little bit, I wanted to kind of dive into that, because we talked about that on Track Girl Summer, where, you know, not a lot of, we always talk about athletes not specializing earlier, and you mm-hmm. did. And I wonder if it played into any, you know, thoughts of burnout or anything like that. I mean, obviously you've been around for a really long time and didn't show us that you were burnt out, but did you experience it and we just didn't see it?
I think that, so I'll start with the specializing question first. If there's any regret that I have over my career, it's the not trying other things. I specialized early, but I do think that I had longevity, and I think what played in my favor was that my mother was also a young athlete. And so I always tell the story. One day I went to practice and I had 10 400s and I think I ran like 2 400s and I peed myself on my way to the bathroom. And at the same time, my mom was coming into practice and my mom was like, "What's the workout? Who's doing that? Not my kid." She yanked me off the team that day. And I like to tell that story because we are in a culture where we're seeing parents overwork their kids and overtrain their kids. And although I specialized very early, I attribute my longevity to my mother being the one that was like, "No, you're not going to overwork my kid." Mm-hmm. 10 400s. I mean, even as a professional, I don't do 10 400s in a workout. That's just insane to put on a child.
If so, it's not at marathon pace.
No.
that's like a workout we would do.
Yeah. So right. I do wish, though, that is one of my regrets. I do wish that I had tried other sports. But for me, it was just, I'm good at this. I tried basketball. It didn't work out. Everybody likes to win. I went back to what I knew I was good at. Yeah. But I do feel like, you know, doing other sports, the skills are transferable. Yeah. And so that's where I say, like, I wish that I would have done that. And I advise other young athletes that, like, hey, you don't have to specialize early. You know, you can try out other things and have fun. Mm-hmm. And then to your first question, which I'm answering second, I'll say my mom was very good at, and to this day, very good at separating encouragement from pressure. To this day, even though it's my job, there's still the question of, is this what you want to do? Are you enjoying this? The pressure more so came from myself, me putting, you know, we're our worst critic, mm-hmm. and we put the most pressure on ourselves. And my father, you know, my father was a coach. They ran track. That's how my parents met, at a D2 university in New York. And my father ended up coaching that team. And I used to go to practice with him when he was coaching. But once I started running track, it was really my mom who was more so involved. My dad wasn't really the one taking me to practice and such. So really was my mom who was like really instrumental in the support. And she was awesome. Still is awesome.
Yeah. I see her all the time. I'm like a big Natasha's mom fan. Or Natasha's mom. Because all of your Instagram, I'm like, okay, yeah, we know. I love that so much. Yeah, there's just a lot to be said. Pressure is a good thing, but it's like how to learn to handle it. Yeah. So moving forward into just like talking a little bit more about what you guys are doing now and, you know, with Track Girls Summer and why you started Track Girls Summer. I love, you know, the tagline, bringing the culture to track and field, because mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, can you just tell us, Corey, maybe like, what does it mean to be bringing the culture to track and field?
Yeah, I think we're in a sport that's made up of diverse people, you know, all these different cultures, and the majority of the media outlets are white men. And so it's like, how can you properly tell our stories if you're not part of the communities in which you are reporting on? And I think that, you know, also having the perspective of like, not only are we part of this culture, like we are also part of this sport on an elite level. And so we kind of have a inside look at our sport. And I think it's just easy for athletes to talk to athletes. And I feel like I've been really blessed working with Natasha. And I think we have had a lot of people really pour into what we've been doing. And I think it's been crazy that, you know, we've got a lot of yeses when it comes to our show.
Way more yeses than no's.
Yeah. And it's like people that, you know, not only our peers, but people that are like literal icons, legends in our sport. And I'm just like, wait, Sandra Farmer Patrick just brought out all of her couture track uniforms. Like, she dug up in her attic for us. Jackie Jonah Kersey is over here troubleshooting tech so that, you know, her camera can be right to come on our show. Like, Mike Powell was like, "I can come on your show, but I got to go to church. Actually, I'm having such a good time talking with you and Gil Deavers."
Jesus can wait.
That's a big compliment.
And I think it's, I think the reason why is because, like, a lot of people, I think they get what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And so it's been really fun. Just being able to connect and and tell the story, not even tell the stories, to allow athletes to tell their stories in a way that's organic and that goes on beyond like, hey, talk about this race and, you know, what was the split in your training? Like, we're more than that. Like, people are human beings, and we say all the time, like, we're fans of our sport, but we're more so fans of the people of our sport. So that was a long-winded
response. No, it's everything. It's everything. And there is a lot to your stories, I think. Mm-hmm. Molly, did you want to?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that we're seeing a lot of women athletes across a lot of sports start their own like niche media outlets, whether it's a YouTube channel, a podcast, an actual like media platform, like with Together. And I think that's kind of the way to show people what's possible, what other women sports fans want, what sports fans are missing. Mm-hmm. What was the moment, like, were you guys thinking that this needs to happen and we need to be the ones to do it? Or like, what was the inspiration and how'd you get started?
We were told that we were doing this.
Who told you? Like, who was like, you two are the ones to get this done?
The internet. But Natasha could tell that story.
First of all, so many things that I want to say. And Corey, I think you know what I want to say. Corey and I had done a couple of segments on my YouTube channel called Tea Time with Tasha. And the viewers just loved our energy. And it was like, wait, like, we have some energy here. We have great rapport. And it's interesting because we don't always agree on things, but we have a way of like having this respectful banter of like, maybe not, you know? And then neither one of us made it to the Olympics. I went to the trials. Unfortunately, Corey was hurt before the trials. So it was a situation where it was like, okay, we're home. And then somehow like that turned into our Olympic experience. And we were asked to do something in conjunction with a production company called World's Greatest. And then we ended up doing it for 13 days straight over the Olympics. And we were like, "Woo, this is a full-time job." But we had so much fun, as dog tired as we were. But Molly, I want to like piggyback on what you said earlier, because there was a moment while we were doing the broadcast over the Olympics, and Corey, I don't know if you remember what the topic was or how we got to that point where I said, you know, when I go out and I talk to young girls, I have my foundation, Natasha Hastings Foundation, which is for girls. I always emphasize that we need more of us in the journalism space, the camera woman space, the executive space, because when we look at how our stories are being told, as Corey said earlier, they're being told by white men. And I said, more than anything, if we want to impact the decisions that are being made on our behalf, as well as the way that we are portrayed in the media, we need more of us in those spaces. Because when I look out and look at the cameraman, I've never seen a camera woman out there. So when you look at how, you know, we're out there competing in these skimpy uniforms, and then we're captured in a not so flattering position, well, who's behind the camera? And I remember Corey having a visible moment where she was like, hold up, wait a minute. There's some truth to that. So
that's a real
on track
stat.
Girl summer. Yeah,
that's a real stat.
We're mm-hmm. giving the people their flowers. And so we'd like to pay the flowers to you all as well, in that like, we're not just talking about it, we're doing it and taking mm-hmm. the space to actively tell the stories of other women, because we're not going to be portrayed the way that we want to be portrayed if we don't find that voice and use that voice for ourselves.
I love that so much. Talk about taking up space. And Natasha, you also added to the space that you're taking up as an athlete, as a woman, as a Black woman, now as a mom. Mm-hmm. You know, can you tell us a little bit about that entry as well, and like, you know, how you navigated that? I mean, you know, we talked a little bit on Track Girl Summer about my experience, and then yours, you know, you having a woman there to talk to that helped mm-hmm. protect that space for you. But like, can you give us a little bit more about how you navigated that?
Becoming a mother was hard. still is hard, but it's one of the most beautiful things that I've ever done. Wouldn't change it. Can't wait to do it again. But there was fear in the moment that I found out I was pregnant. What does this mean for my career? I wasn't someone that was planning my career but I was in a way that I was like, I'm going to retire and then have a kid. We all know how you make babies. I obviously was being grown and I got pregnant.
A plus and, B equals, hey, baby.
Yeah. So I was faced with, I don't even want to say I was faced with the choice because the choice never crossed my mind. Because I knew that this was what I wanted. Right. But I went through what I guess, I don't know, prenatal depression. I was like, why is no one talking about this? That like we emphasize a lot of postpartum depression. But during I was pregnant, I was going through what I felt like was depression. And I think largely because I had to hide my pregnancy for 5 or 6 months. I didn't tell my brand until I was about 5 months. And at that point it was because it was like, girl, you can't hide this much longer. And then when I finally made the phone call, I was relieved to hear, oh my God, congratulations. Why didn't you tell us sooner? Mm-hmm. You know, and then it turned into, doing some ad work and doing even some, postnatal recovery stuff with the human performance team that like, they really rallied around me and supported me, but it actually wasn't until your New York Times op-ed came out maybe a month or so after me telling them that I was pregnant. They actually called me back and they were like, we just want to apologize because I knew you were stressed out and I knew this was a tough phone call to make. But after reading this, now I see what pressure you were under. So it was a combination of two things. Number one, I made that call to two women. I'm gonna call their names, Jamie Christ and Tori Hannah. And then it was hearing another woman's story that then made them say, oh shit.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to curse here?
Yes, absolutely. Put a little E there, children.
I thought I grasped what was happening, but now I see what she was truly dealing with. And so, you know, having the space to make that phone call to a woman, but then having the woman say, wait, no. I heard you, but I want you to know I hear you. That was big because it does make it a little bit hard for me in a sense when I go into some spaces and I want to honor that, you know, your experience was totally different from mine and it's tough, but then at the same time, I feel like I'm an example of how it can be.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be the way that you experienced it. And a lot of other women, Allison, had to experience it. But it took making that call to a woman.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a lot about even just having the opportunity to open up dialogue and like have that conversation. Like, you know, maybe people not even recognizing this is a problem. People didn't recognize this is a problem across all industries, not just in sports. We know sports is just a microcosm of what's happening in the world. All of a sudden there's like eyes on these athletes that need the same support so many women industries the world over have needed. And now just because we pay attention to them all the time on the screen and we, you know, we applaud their performances and how we can physically see it. It's like, oh, how do we make sure that this isn't a continual problem? And like you said, acknowledging that it's, you're a small percentage, which is not what we want. We want for the way that your story panned out to be the greater percentage, like be the greater good. And even you sharing that and having the platform now to be able to say, oh, we have to actually kind of help sharing more about what it looks like when we do have our pregnant athletes.
Because that's some of the problem. We can't even imagine what it looks like, right?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Like Natasha, I know we came up in the sport at the same time. You didn't see women having kids and then coming back. And so we were just, did you internalize that? Because I know I was always like, you can't even ask for anything. Like you have to just be done with what you're doing. Or some women just.
It was that.
They just take the cut and don't say anything. And so that's what I saw over and over until Alicia changed everything for us.
Literally. Yeah, totally. And even, I mean, the self-defeating thoughts within myself, would I be able to come back from having a child? Yeah. But a lot of that rests in the idea of, will I be supported? Because mm-hmm. let's be honest, like, to be a parent and to be an athlete both require a tremendous amount of support.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
If you don't have the support, it's tough to imagine. So yeah. And I want to also point out, Alicia, you were kind of getting to it, that it's a problem that's bigger than sports, right? But because we have the visibility, we can change it for all women, because no woman should have to make the choice between career and family. And that was where 100%. I found solace in my pregnancy, was that I realized, like, oh, a lot of women deal with this. Mm-hmm. But it was also like, but why are we dealing with this? You know, right, and right. It's not just a women in sports thing, but it truly is an American woman thing.
Right. And you, I don't even want to use the word push through, because it makes me cringe saying that. You, you know, had your super duper cute son, Liam. You call Liam, it's William, correct? Right.
Yeah.
Full name. And then, you know, you had the support around you, but then you suddenly became a single mom training for the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, can you tell us a little bit about that experience and like how you were able to kind of rearrange what you needed to get done and even like put your brain towards, I'm still going to go towards trying to make this Olympic team. And how it affected you. Like, let's tell the truth, like real raw, open the book.
Yeah. Even
if you need to, whichever way.
It's not something I'm really proud of. And when I say I'm not really proud of it, I mean it from a standpoint of, I didn't give myself a choice. Giving up was not an option. What I did do was, my son's father and I broke up on a Saturday. By Tuesday, I was sitting in a therapist chair. Mm. I remember my mom and I were on our way from the breakup happening. I was on my way to try on my wedding dress, and my mom looked at me and she was like, I don't know what you do, but you need to get into some therapy. And I was like, yeah. And I remember thinking to myself, like, probably won't get married. The wedding was in like 6 weeks from that. And I was like, definitely won't get married in 6 weeks, but maybe we can go to counseling, get this thing figured out. And then I went and tried on my dress, got a text message, and I was like, oh, okay, this is done. Mm-hmm. And I immediately went into protection mode. Like I said, I got into therapy that Tuesday. My mom was already living with me in Texas, so I had that support, because my son's father was working. And so, again, support, I already knew, like, I'm going to need help with the baby and training. And so I was lucky in the sense that I had that access and that support, where my mom was able to be there with me full time. And then COVID hit, which was kind of a blessing in disguise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was tough. But I think I honestly attribute me not losing my mind or containing the lossage of the mind mm-hmm. to getting into therapy, because there were things that I had to uncover. And when I got into therapy, I remember very clearly saying, I'm here to figure out why I keep coming back to this situation and how I fix that so that I don't repeat this, because I don't want to repeat this for my son. Mm. And so a lot of it, when I say I'm not proud of it, a lot of it was for my son as opposed to it being for me.
Mm. Powerful.
Which is what I think, unfortunately, a lot of Black women do. We put ourselves last. And even from the standpoint I probably needed to take a step back from track mm-hmm. To take care of myself, I didn't give myself that space, because I still had to do everything that I said I was going to do. And I still had to be the best mom that I wanted to be. And I still had to show up with a smile on my face, even though on the inside I was hurting. But before we got on this call, I had a session with my therapist. So
yes, yes. And again, like the whole just awareness right now, just having this conversation with Natasha Hastings, this athlete that you just see perform, and like this whole person that's within there. And then, you know, just again, we talk about sports being a microcosm of what's happening in the world, sharing your journey in therapy, you know, your journey in motherhood, single motherhood, and so many people having opportunity to relate from how they see you.
Yeah.
You know, on the track, and now how they see you, like, oh my goodness, like this is inspiring and it's powerful for me, you know, like she's a whole person. And so when we talk about Track Girl Summer and being like, hey guys, you know, these are these people that you see as these, how's the race? You know, no, they're trying to bring it back and say, hey, like, take a look at, like, there's much bigger picture for us to talk about. And I want to bring those athlete stories to you guys. So I love this so much. And you also just, you know, being who you are, you know, it's, we're lucky that we get Track Girl Summer. And therapy, if you have any notes for anybody that's trying to figure out how to get into therapy, I'd love to just like a quick little, you know, note for anybody that's listening. Like, how did you do it so quickly? How do we get to it?
I love that my very first session, my therapist asked, so what do you need? And I was like, huh? What I knew that I needed immediately was someone that looked like me. This was not my first experience with therapy, but I think given my experience this time going to therapy, I wanted someone that looked for me. So I literally just Googled Black female therapist in Austin, Texas.
You just went like, we're going to take a leap.
And I searched. Yeah. But there are different platforms out there. I love Black Girl Therapy on Instagram. There's also the Loveland. That's a really good resource, and they can actually help, because access to therapy is a tough one. Not everyone can afford it, but we all need it. And so Loveland is a platform that will help with some of that I really like. Loveland Foundation, that is. But yeah, if you got a smartphone, you can search the person that you're looking for. And don't be afraid or ashamed to be specific. Like, I wanted a Black woman.
It's so huge. And Corey, I want to kind of dive over to you a little bit and just... same, like, you know, there's a lot to tell within your story that we don't even know about. Why is this? You know, we've had these storied athletes, you know, you've had quite a bit of injuries, you know, these last couple of years, and you have a new diagnosis with diabetes. Can you tell us about, you know, your season last year, how that unfolded going into, you know, from COVID into the Olympic year and then not making the team?
Yeah, I kind of been struggling with some Achilles problems for like the past, like, what is it, 3 years now? Which is kind of hard because, you know, you kind of need your Achilles to run. And for me, it was just kind of like, I think I'm really good at compartmentalizing. And as a born hurdler, I'm really, really good with dealing with pain. It's kind of my specialty. But my injury kind of just like, it wears on you because, like, you know, when you compete, you kind of go into this special headspace where like, all right, I'm going to suffer and I'm going to be okay with it. And I was going into that headspace, every single day to like get out of bed, because like some days I wake up and it'd be like excruciating pain to walk. And like, that was kind of, you know, taxing just like mentally to have to be in like fight or flight mode all the time. And like my coach, and so it was like hard to train, because by the time I got to my workout, like I had just expended so much energy just going through my warm-up, just trying to be like, let's try not to limp through these drills, you know. To the point where my coach was like, you're not going to trials, like I'm not having you go out here and like crash and burn our hurdle, because like,
I didn't even know that that Flo made that decision. Okay, sorry.
Well, yeah, of course he did. I'm crazy. Like, you think I was going to be like, I'm not going to trial? Because in my mind, like, I always say I'm kind of a bit of a psychopath. Like, I'm always just like, okay, I don't have good practices, but I always believe in myself that like, when it comes, I know I'm a gamer. So I'll figure out a way to turn it on. If I have to limp across the line, okay, like, But it was just, it's just difficult because at my height, as a 400 hurdler, I need every single inch I can get on my stride in order to hit my stride pattern. I'm not, you know, I mean, I like to say I'm 6'3", but I'm not. and so, it, and my injury was like restricting my stride because I really couldn't push off of my foot like I wanted to. And then it was like, I couldn't push into the hurdle, couldn't really land. It was just a mess. And so,
yeah, Coach was like, that doesn't really work for hurdling.
Yeah. And so was getting over that, like doing track all summer. It was funny because, like when we were doing the Olympic coverage, we would like report on the Olympics in the morning and then like spend the rest of the day getting ready for the next day's show. And then waking up at night and in the morning to watch the Olympics and be ready. It was just like, we were up all day, all night. We were getting like 3-4 hours of sleep. So I was like crashing at Natasha's place so we could do the show. And at one point I was like, I feel like I'm pregnant because even though there was no possible way that
it was. Oh, okay. I was like, you know what? You can tell us that story too.
No.
Grown activities.
It was like, whoa. I was waking up 4 to 5 times at least a night to pee. I was eating all the time. I was drinking and I felt like I couldn't quench my thirst. Like I was drinking every hour on the hour and it felt like, you know, when you're working out and like you get that first gulp of water and then all of a sudden you can't stop drinking. That was that. And all I was doing was sitting down like Liam, I feel so bad. Like Liam had his birthday cake and I ate from the L in Liam to the end and finished the cake because I just couldn't stop. It was over a couple of days, but it was like, I ate the whole, and I was like, what is going on with me? And I was talking to my friend and I was like, yeah, like I'm always thirsty. Like I like went into the shower and I had to bring a water bottle because I was like, I can't wash my hair and like be without water for that long. And my friend was like, you should go check your blood sugar. Like my sister had the same symptoms and she ended up being diabetic. And I was like, there's no way I'm diabetic. That sounds crazy. And the irony was that I was like, I'm not diabetic. On that maybe 45 minute phone call, I peed like 4 times. But I drove to Walgreens and I like bought a little glucose monitor. And the reader said hi, which meant that I was over 600 at least, because it didn't even give me a number to put that in like perspective. Like,
yeah,
the range is 70 to 150.
Wow.
It should be normally. And so what you're supposed to do is go straight to the hospital because you can slip into a diabetic coma at that.
Okay, I was hoping that you gave the gravity of, okay.
You guys gotta just like Google a little bit of what's
supposed to be happening. So this is happening in the middle of the track girl summer.
This is actually right after the conference, right after. But like we finished. All the symptoms were happening. So it was like,
you were dialing in all the symptoms. Actually, you'd been already been experiencing it, right?
Yeah, I had been experiencing it I had been experiencing it, and then I finally was like, what is happening? Like, why am I feeling like this? And so you're supposed to go immediately to the emergency room. I was like, well, my phone's on E, so let me go home and charge my phone. And like, I'm also hungry, so like, let me get a snack, because what I'm not about to do is be in the emergency room with no phone and hungry. Because I knew I was going to be there for a while.
Yeah, he could be there a long time.
Yeah. And so go there and
it's like, hold on, I have a workout tomorrow morning. Is that
if you know me, like that makes so much sense. Like if I had a workout, I would probably work around it. So I went there and they're like, yeah, you're definitely a diabetic. And my A1C, which is basically like a reading of your glucose levels for the past 3 months. So I basically had it for at least 3 months from what they can tell. Mm-hmm. Was at 12. So I think 5 to 6 is like healthy. The scale goes to 14. Wow. So, which means I was averaging a blood sugar over 300 for the past 3 months.
Wow.
And that's why I was peeing so much, because like your body's trying to expel all the sugar.
Right.
And I just was like, this is ridiculous. Natasha was mad at me because I was like, I was just making jokes because I was like, what what is going on right now. And right. my first response to anything traumatic is humor.
Same.
And so it's been like a process, just like having to shoot myself with insulin 4 times a day. And like, luckily I don't have problems with needles because that's not an option with diabetes and, mm-hmm. you know, figuring out my diet and, you know, all that stuff. Luckily, my coach, the diet I've been on for the past 5 years is basically the ideal diet for a diabetic. So I'm like, at least I know how to do this. And I actually have gotten my numbers. I'm really proud of myself. I found my numbers really under control. But yeah, it's been kind of weird because I feel like I've been this elite athlete and like my body has, you know, done these amazing things. And in like the course of a like few weeks, I was like, I went from like, I'm not going to the Olympics and I'm struggling to walk some days. And like, because of diabetes at one point, like my vision was deteriorating. I'm like, I can't see, I can't walk. I gotta take medication. Like I was like, my body just like went to crap all overnight. And I was like, what is life right now? But it's fine. Like I'm getting it together. Luckily, like I feel like it's weird because my family's really concerned about me. They're like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm fine. Like, I can handle anything. And I'm just trying to keep like a positive attitude. And like, luckily I've had a lot of great people who are like very supportive. My mom came and stayed with me for like 3 weeks because she was like, my child needs help. And then my best friend came in town, Ajay, and then my sister came in town. So I've been under a lot of supervision and my neighbors have been really helpful. And Natasha has been really helpful. I get a lot more calls these days because people are concerned. But yeah, it's been.
Yeah, we want calls before something serious happens, but that's nice too.
Well, they do too. But I think.
So was it type 1 or type 2?
Type 1, which is genetic.
Okay.
AKA mm-hmm. juvenile diabetes. So like they, like, it's funny because when I play stuff in my head, like throughout my life, I'm like, maybe I like have had this and like my lifestyle has like really masked the fact that I probably had this for a lot longer than I did. Mm-hmm. Cause like, I've never had a sweet tooth. My activity, cause I'm noticing now, like, because I track my glucose, when I exercise, my glucose goes down. So that probably helped. And then like, if you know me, I keep a snack on me at all times. And I was just like, I probably have just been managing my sugar my whole life without knowing.
Without knowing it,
So luckily, a lot of the things that help make me a great athlete has been like really beneficial in like figuring out how to manage this like little autoimmune disease I've got going on. So
yeah. Okay. I want to just for people to just listen, like what are, again, just some quick, you know, things to look for.
Yeah. Extreme thirst and hunger, and peeing frequently are, really good signs. Also, I guess I was noticing my limbs would go numb a lot. Like, you know, when you get like the statics in your fingers and your toes, because it's a circulation thing. And blurry vision, I got that eventually. I got it after, but because diabetes affects your blood, it affects pretty much every system of your body. So it affects your eyes because the small capillaries in your eyes can make your lens swell. And so those are some of the signs to look out for, or you're too low. It's like, it's weird because you can also go hypoglycemic. I was hyper when I discovered that I had diabetes, but you can also be hypo because your body just isn't good with handling sugar. So that means your blood sugar is too low. So that you can get really shaky. When I get it, I like get hot. Like I feel like I'm about to pass out, like hot flashes type deal. And you can also pass out. So those are some of the symptoms.
I don't want to pass out. So everybody pay attention.
Even if you're an elite athlete, pay attention.
Yes, exactly.
You can still have health issues crop up. So don't ignore. Don't push through. Yeah. Don't push through that. I have a question for both of you. So like, what is the future of, you're both changed things up a little bit in this Olympic post-Olympic year. So where are you now? What's next in track and field, school-wise, stuff like that? But also, what's the future of Track Girls Summer? What do you guys see going? Where do you see that going the next few months?
To complete and total world domination. Something slight like that.
I like that.
I'll let Natasha answer because Natasha's got a lot of things going on.
Well, okay. So, because I also feel like I need to add, like she mentioned, I was like, take this seriously. Like Corey's car was packed up to drive and follow me to South Carolina to continue Track Girl Summer. And she's like, yeah, I have to go to the doctor on Tuesday, but I'll be there on Wednesday. And I was like, sit down somewhere. So I am back in South Carolina. I'm studying clinical mental health, also going back to counseling, and then COVID sparked the passion in me to become a counselor myself, seeing the need to take up space and do the work, if you will, there. But Track Girl Summer, we see this growing into a bigger platform. We want to continue to tell stories. We have some ideas that we're just trying to figure out how to package and pitch because the ideas are too big for us to try to do them on our own. But, you know, again, we are ultimately fans of the people more than the athlete. And so a lot like what you guys are doing here, which is finding out what makes the athlete tick, what makes the athlete human, because we talk a lot about being superhumans, but we are actually humans. But in the meantime, Corey and I have had to come to terms with we got a lot going on. So Corey's had to find new balance in learning, you know, and I'm not going to speak for you, Corey, but I do think that you.
But I am going to speak for you.
I am. I'm going to therapize you. My friend says you're therapizing me, but Corey does a great job of finding the light and minimizing her experience with type 1 diabetes. And although she's managing it well, it is an adjustment for you along with the rest of your life. And I'm a single mom in school, working, training. So we're figuring out the balance. So we kind of, we're going to put out this much. And then now I'm like, wait. We got a whole lot of life going on top of Track Girl Summer. So I think ultimately we want to make sure that we are proud of the product that we put out. And so we're just figuring out what that pace is going to look like for us. It's changed a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but we're more concerned with putting out a good product. And
Corey, I love that. Yeah. Corey.
Yeah, I agree with Natasha.
Don't agree. Honestly, this can be our therapy session.
It's this dang diabetes. It's like, it makes me so tired some days where I'm like, I have things to do for Track Girl Summer and like my life in general. And I'm like, you know, and my body's like, how about you sleep for 5 hours today? And I'm like, but we just woke up.
She's making a joke, but there have literally been days that like I'm texting her and I get no response. And you guys can hear Corey's a ball of energy. Like she is on 10 from sun up to sundown. And then she'll text me and be like, so I've been asleep for the last 5 or 6 hours.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Take care of yourself, Corey.
Here's the thing. Diabetes is not going to stop in the show though. but yeah, I definitely think that we want to keep telling athlete stories. And I also think we have a lot more, like Natasha said, we have some ideas to bring some different content than we've been pushing out. And like in my like dreams, like we'll be doing like some live shows like at meets. And like I want to just like have our couch at Worlds. I don't know how that's gonna happen, but like just it'll happen. I'm manifesting. And yeah, and then right now, I don't know what's going on with me on the track right now because I've just decided like get healthy and find balance. I'm trying to figure out like how to work out for an extended period of time without my sugar dropping too low, which is like a balance. So right now I'm just kind of taking it day by day and slowly, because as much as I like to push myself, like my body's like, girl, I will sit both of us down. And I'm just like, all right. So Natasha, you should be proud of me for actually listening for once to my body. But yeah. And other than that, like, you know, just figuring things out one day at a time. People are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I love that. Okay. So it sounds like, I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there. If there are any professionals that are really good at packaging and pitching, email info@trackgirlsummer.com.
Yes.
I'll come with no games.
Yes, please.
Any professionals that know that, go ahead and send that over. I think I got it right with that.
Yeah,
follow them.
I have tried to like learn how to build a website. We've been doing the social media editing. I'm like, this is not Corey.
I knew very early on, that's not my wheelhouse, Corey. Yeah. I tried to edit a video and I was like, Corey, I don't know what I did. And I know she was over there like cussing me out, like, why did you even touch it?
You guys are crushing it.
You are crushing it. That's why I was curious, like, how much is DIY with
all of it? You guys know, I told you on Track Girl Summer, we have similar aspirations. My like dream job is to host my own show. So I'm loving this.
We all want to be on ESPN.
We're all like, yes, you know, we have bigger personalities than what you see of us going, you know, straight face being super serious. So I love this. I want you guys to take it to the freaking mountaintop.
To the top.
Yeah. So everybody support them. Track Girl Summer all day. And also, if you guys need for me to make a jingle or something like that, I'm just trying to latch on. You know, they're like, we didn't invite Alicia. I'm just like on their back.
We definitely invited you to the show.
They got their rolly bag and I'm just hanging on to it. Trying to be a part of the show.
No, Alicia, I have to take this time to be like, because Alicia not only came on our show, she was like, also here are a bunch of resources. If you need anything, here's my email. I'm like, I'll help you with all these things. Like, you are very much like for women empowerment, and like, not just, you don't just say it, you put it into practice. So I really appreciate that.
I love you guys so much. There is room for all of us, like all of our big dreams and our big goals. Yeah. I really just believe that. And I just think like, I don't want to be a part of this like problem of people thinking that you have to squish people out of.
There's not enough like, space for us all.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I saw space.
Molly, we need you to come on Track Girl Summer, and then we need you both to come back to Track Girl Summer. Okay.
Any day. I need to get a good look ready because you guys always look so nice.
Yes. I will say,
Some days I'm lazy. I'm the lazy single mom. Like, I ain't got time for all this stuff.
So fun. So comfortable on Track Girl Summer. I'm telling you, like, the best show, hands down, that I've been on. Just literally, like, you know, felt like I'd taken my bra off, you know. I think we did do that at the show. Let my fro out. It was beautiful. It was such a great experience. We hung out for so long. I got away from bedtime because I just was like, oops.
Were you in person?
Yeah.
Were you in person?
I felt like I was in person. I felt like best friends for life. You know, they're like, we're going now. I'm like, no.
I love it.
So you guys, if you want to see that dynamic, every single person that they interview on Track Girl Summer, it's just, you feel like you're hanging out in their living room. So
yes, you get the stories, you get the inside stories, the personality, the banter is all there.
It's all fun. So tune in.
Oh, thanks guys. Most importantly, you get my dog.
You get Kovu. That's true.
Yes. And they, you know, they vibe with it. They had a flower in their hair. It was wonderful. Before we go, I think we covered quite a bit, but I want to make sure we don't leave anything out. You know, the reason why we have the show is to better help tell stories of women athletes. So anything that we left out, anything individually that you guys are doing that we need to go ahead and we tap in, we can, you know, shop 400 meter diva collection, athlete training journal, like that. Tell us all the things.
Shop.
Yes. All the links. Tell us.
Doing it, but shop the trackgirlsummer.com. We've got hats and t-shirts. If you,
I have to step to pause because I want to remind Natasha that this is a podcast.
I know. That's why I was like, I'm doing it, but I don't care. I know.
And I was like, no,
she showed us, the merchandise.
But I appreciate it. I just wanted the listeners to like hear what's going on.
That's right. Okay. The visual was Natasha places track girl summer cap, pink mesh, black front trucker hat on head. Beautiful, wonderful piece. You need it.
Yes.
And I'm doing the things to sell the product. Okay.
That's right. And you guys, you know, purchasing their products helps support them being able to bring this stuff to you guys. So that's why you need to go get it.
Yes, please.
You got that search bar.
And oh, I forgot to mention Corey. When I was doing a little bit of Googling, you wrote a book. I don't know how long ago that was. Did you write a training journal? Is it a different Corey Carter?
I made a training journal. But it's not like I wrote a book.
It's it's something you can buy and
inspirational, right?
Yes. You can buy it on Amazon, Christian Athlete Training Journal. It was actually I guess that's a theme of me. I don't make Olympic teams, and then I throw myself into a creative project to distract me.
We identify.
It's healthy. You got to keep going, right?
That was the 2016 project. And
that we need to push some more because it is a wonderful product. And I think a lot of athletes, or not even just athletes, Christians, anyone who works out, it's a wonderful tool.
We will link Christian Athlete Training Journal on Amazon by Corey Carter.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys.
And we will link 400 Meter Diva Lip Collection.
And eyelashes.
And eyelashes. I need my son's eyelashes. I'm like,
the boys get everything the girls want.
Well, I'm like, oh my goodness, Aster. He uses it. He knows what he's doing. I love it. So awesome. We appreciate having you guys so much on this show, Keeping Track. We love keeping track with you guys. Again, Track Girl Summer at Track Girl Summer on Instagram, Track Girl Summer on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And if you, again, have any real professional pitch ideas, please. Everybody in the business world that has like, hey, you know, info@trackgirlsummer.com. I'm doing it. They didn't tell me to do that. I'm just like, we love it. Well, thank you so much for having me on Track Girl Summer, but for you guys coming on Keeping Track.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for having us, and can't wait for Molly to come on over to Track Girl Summer. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be a good time.
I would love to.
All right. Well, that's
Thanks,
all.
Ladies.
Thank you, everyone.
Keep track. Keep track. Keep track. Keep track. One time. One. Yeah. Yeah. Keep track. Keep track. One time. One. Yeah. 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 Keep track. You already know what you're track. Keep track. Keep track.
Major shout outs to What Cheer Writers Club Podcasting Studio, a nonprofit supporting Rhode Island's content creators and where Roisin and I record, and to Rudy Nakashima for our funky outro song. Thanks, guys.
Don't say anything you guys don't want to be held up in court.
What? First things first. Let me.
All right, sweet.
Don't come here.
I wish you were on camera, but you can see me rolling my eyes.
Don't talk about my dog. Don't talk about my mama.
Women's Running Stories, where we explore the intersection between running and life. Because every woman who is committed to a running journey has a story to tell, and this is where you'll find those stories. I am host and producer Cherie Louise Turner. I'm a 53-year-old runner, and together with original music by musician and runner Cormac O'Regan, we bring these inspirational stories to life. Please join us to fuel your adventures.